So welcome everyone. It's so nice that we have a large crowd today. That's great, even though it's a vacation week. Welcome everyone. It's great to be here. As you know, I love that we continue to support each other in our Jewish meditation mindfulness practice journey. And I love that we co-create this sacred spirituality, the sacred space. That we nourish each other each week, a true blessing. So this Shabbat is Shabbat HaKodesh, the Shabbat just before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and the last of the four special Shabbatot before Passover, as we gear into being. As we gear into embracing our freedom and letting go of everything that constricts us, it serves as a reminder to recommit ourselves to living, not just for the 8 days of Pesach, but for the whole year in accordance with the Jewish calendar and its profound messages, which can so impact on our personal lives and our world. This week's Parsha, Shmini, is composed of three parts. The first tells of the consecration of the tabernacle on the eighth day after the 7 days of preparation that we read in last week's Parsha Tzav. The second part tells of the tragic deaths of Nadav and Abihu, who are consumed by a fire sent from God when they attempt to offer, quotes, a strange fire. Some commentators say that the reason for their deaths was that they didn't follow the rules and guidelines for giving a sacrifice, that they brought a foreign fire before God, while other commentators say it was because of their spontaneity and enthusiasm. Also included in this second part of the Parsha is Aaron being silent upon hearing of his son's death. His silence perhaps symbolizes, of course, shock, but also consolation, acceptance, and continuation. Life simply must go on. And the third part describes the dietary laws of kashrut. Land animals must have cloven split hooves and must chew the cud, meaning that they must eat grass. Seafood or fish found in rivers must have fins and scales. Eating any sort of shellfish is not allowed. And it's forbidden to eat birds of prey. There are also guidelines for what is pure and impure. In the beginning of Genesis, the Torah depicts God creating order out of chaos. God imposes order on the world by acts of separating, naming, and placing. God creates distinctions. The theme of distinctions is presented in this parsha, both in the story of Nadav and Abihu regarding the rules of sacrifice and in the laws of kashrut. Regarding Nadav and Abihu, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks states, it is likely that in this time of great celebration, they were carried away by the mood of the moment. They acted in a kind of ecstasy from such deep joy and passion, and perhaps they lost control. They were caught up by the sheer excitement of the opening of the first collective house of worship in the history of Abraham's children. Their behavior was spontaneous. They wanted to do something extra, uncommanded, to express their religious fervor. But they went too far. He goes on to say, Judaism would have no continuity without structure, but without spontaneity, it would have no fresh life. The challenge is to maintain the balance without ever confusing the place of each. Robert Thornburg, a Jewish educator and a PhD candidate at Hebrew College, speaks of these three parts of the parsha as a sandwich. He says that Nadav and Abihu were not arrogant, self-absorbed, or envious of the position of their elders, Moses and Aaron. They were actually exceedingly religious, enamored of the beauty of the sacrifices, and simply lost control due to their enthusiasm and joy. They got carried away and went beyond the scope of what was acceptable to God. This view helps us look at the three contrasting sections of this parsha through the use of a metaphor, that of a sandwich. The tantalizing tasting filling of the sandwich is represented by the middle section of the parsha, the zealousness of Nadav and Abihu, and their unbridled fervor, representing the two pieces of bread that are highly ritualized, structured, and inflexible ways in which sacrifices are meant to be offered, and the equally rigid dietary laws. The parsha comes to teach us that in life we must not let go of our passions. We must celebrate and revel in our joy and enthusiasm for what matters deeply to us. But at the same time, we must also ground ourselves in the constancy of family and community, traditions and standards. If we do, the sandwich of our lives may well taste sweeter and more satisfying than we could ever imagine. In relationship to nourishment, the Buddha told the monks there are four kinds of nutriments which enable living beings to grow and maintain life. What are these four nutriments? The first is edible food. The second is the food of sense impressions. The third is the food of volition, action. And the fourth is the food of consciousness. The idea of nourishing ourselves involves more than eating healthy foods to nourish our bodies. We also need the experience of other types of nourishment, perhaps through our, we also need other types of nourishment, as example, through our senses. What we see, what we hear, what we smell, what we touch, what we sense in our skin, like the wind, the rain, the sun, or a hug. All of our senses feed us. All of our senses allow us to be present in the moment. And through our meditation practice, our senses become heightened, more awakened. We have all experienced after a long sit or a meditation retreat how colors look more vivid, how food has an enhanced taste, how keenly we hear sound and voice, and how keenly we can even hear the feelings of joy and suffering of others, how our bodies react to the elements in our environment. All of these evolve from our continued practice. The silence we experience together and apart allows us to be present in the given moment for all of the nourishment our senses bring to our beings. The practice empowers us to have right speech and right action, to not be reactive. The practice enables us to experience the expansiveness of our being, of our consciousness, and the practice allows us to have moments with the divine, with the ineffable oneness of being, with the interconnectedness of all. As a result of these experiences, our compassion and gratefulness expands, as does our connectedness to each other, to our families, to people, to the environment. Our ability to deal with the unexpected, with the impermanence of life, is enhanced. Our interbeing expands. Interbeing, as we all know, is a Thich Nhat Hanh expression. And one of the nuns at Plum Village said, "With the practice and the Sangha, we can generate mindfulness and love for us and others to take refuge in." Towards the end of this parsha, in chapter 11, verses 44 and 45, God says, "For I, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, am your God. You shall sanctify yourselves and be holy. for I am holy. You shall not make yourselves impure through any swarming thing that moves upon the earth. For I, Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, am the one who brought you up from the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall be holy, for I am holy. So our spiritual challenge from Rabbi Shefa Gold is, I am Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, the ground of being, your God. Sanctify yourselves and be holy, for I am holy. Rabbi Ben Spratt says, our highest form of holiness is realized when an individual links herself or himself to a collective in moving from isolation to integration, from distinction to connection, God comes to dwell. In world, in word, the primary purpose and the highest holiness is that of connectedness. In our positions of power, in our daily doings, in our practices and rituals, may we reach towards a higher holiness, one in which our primary purpose sees word and world as an opportunity for connection. For it is there God chooses to dwell. And I'd like to end with a quote from the Buddha. Teach this triple truth to all. A generous heart, kind speech, and a life of service and compassion are the things which renew humanity. So let's take a moment of silence.